welcome to the BioBalance Podcast. I'm Dr. Kathy Maupin, founder and medical director of BioBalance Health. We help women and men renew their lives from the inside out with bioidentical hormone pellets, supplements, botanical skincare products, and aesthetic and laser skin therapy. Today's show is the first in a series of interviews with Brett Newcomb, a counselor with over 25 years' experience, who specializes in couples issues and complicated individual mood disorders, and has also been a college professor teaching other counselors how to care for their clients. Brett has been a consultant for BioBalance for years and is an excellent communicator. In this week's show, we discuss the human brain's role in libido and sexual relationships after 40. Brett, today we're talking about my favorite subject, sex, and something I talk about.
Everybody's favorite subject, although we don't all admit it.
And I talk about it all day in the office, yet I'm not a counselor and you are. So, one of the things that I get asked a lot is about where the libido went and why it is gone and what controls libido. And those are the things that you know so much about that I'd love for you to tell me what to say to my patients.
Well, you know, you find in the popular literature that statements to the effect that the brain is your most important sexual organ. And I think it is. And I think we need to think about it a certain way, to talk about it as a sexual organ. And thinking about it that way is actually, in science, it's called a heuristic concept. And a heuristic concept is a way to discuss, that we agree is just a way to discuss, something that doesn't exist in a concrete laboratory sense reality. It's like when you were in kindergarten and your teacher would say, put your thinking cap on. And everybody would, you know, put an imaginary cap on their head and fasten it. There isn't a thinking cap. If we dissected your brain, we wouldn't find a part that we could put under a microscope and say, well, here's a thinking cap. The same thing is true in terms of the brain as a sexual organ. So the brain is more like the eye of the octopus. There are tentacles that are physiological, psychological, emotional, cultural, that are all simultaneously regulated by the brain, not in a hierarchical 1-2-3 way, but in an interwoven way. And so that's where we get to the issue of the libido. It is part of that whole interwoven matrix of messages from all those component parts that we then identify or experience as what we call a sexual experience.
So when patients ask me where their libido went, and my answer is, you've probably lost...
the octopus went away.
Yeah. You probably have lost your testosterone. Let me check you and see if that's the issue and see if we can replace it and see if it comes back. It's much more complicated than that. But testosterone is generally necessary for a healthy libido and a healthy sexual response. Can you tell me a little about the neurotransmitters and...
Well, you want to make a distinction, I think, between primary level dysfunctions and secondary level dysfunctions, with primary being those physiological issues where an individual reports they never really had orgasm or they never had a full sexual experience that was satisfying for them. They may go through the motions, but they haven't ever had it. And the distinction that, at least today, we're talking about are for those couples that have had those high-quality relationships and then for any of a number of possible reasons lost the handle. So we want to talk about the mechanisms of recovery for those who have had it and need to try to get it back. And so then the octopus analogy, I think, holds true. Because when we talk about the octopus, we talk about arousal, we talk about desire, we talk about the physical processes and experiences, we talk about orgasm, we talk about the aftermath. I mean, the whole ball of wax, if we break any component part of that out, it's like a tentacle that we want to focus on. And we may need to focus on specific tentacles, but we don't ever want to lose sight of the whole ball of wax, because the concept of that experience is what people are actually looking for.
Then when my simplistic view of we need to get your hormones back, it still holds true, because in many ways they require that
Absolutely.
To then get their relationship back in all these other ways. One of the tentacles is testosterone, and
they need that. The brain works through the use of chemical messengers. And that's where the heuristic concept comes in. The testosterone is one of the chemical messengers, but we're working to build the whole perceptual experience of a good sexual encounter. And that's where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, but we have to use the specific parts to get the sum. And so you've got to talk about the hormones. You've got to talk about the neurotransmitters. And that's why people have problems when they're on antidepressants, when they're on some kinds of blood pressure medicines. I mean, all of those things are factors that can reduce sexual performance and the sexual experience, whether they reduce the desire. I mean, if somebody has lost the testosterone, then they're not going to feel the desire. And what happens with a lot of couples is they get habituated in their sexual behaviors. And so they fall into a routine of every Wednesday night and every other Saturday morning is our time. And they're not spontaneous anymore. They're not open for other opportunities. They don't look for those things, and they don't recognize them when they present themselves. So if you suddenly get an afternoon where the kids are all out shopped somewhere and you're home, it doesn't occur to you that, oh, now is the time to have creative new sex. It occurs to you, now I can shampoo the carpet because it's not Wednesday night or Saturday morning. And so, and then what
life
happens?
Off testosterone.
When exactly. Yeah. Oh, and habituation. Mm-hmm. Because the habituation effect is I don't tend to think that way because I'm habituated to thinking Wednesday and Saturday. But then when age begins to be a contributing factor or testosterone mm-hmm. loss begins to be a contributing factor, then sometimes on Wednesday or Saturday, I'm anxious. And maybe I recognize, oh, I'm supposed to do this today. But then I think, you know what? It's just too darn much trouble. And I find a creative, indirect opportunity that interferes so that I don't have to perform. And then you get performance anxieties. And couples don't communicate about that stuff. They don't very often have the ability to sit down and say, you know, I'm finding that Wednesdays, I'm avoiding it. I'm aware of it, but I'm avoiding it, and I'm building an anxiety load on Wednesday afternoon because I know the expectation is there. So then I have performance anxieties. And for men, and particularly men beyond 40, performance anxieties are deadly, as you know, mm-hmm. because you talk to men about this stuff mm-hmm. every day. So you get all of that working, and the question is, how do we reverse that?
Right. And most women don't even care if they get it working again. Because without the testosterone in their brain, that decreases their acknowledgement of even being sexual. They mm-hmm. It kind of takes away all parts of sexuality. They don't think about sex at all. Movies don't stimulate that. They don't consider having sex with their spouse. And even if they're not really avoiding it, they just don't have it on their list.
So do the women that you talk to make a distinction between sex and romance? Do they still have romance fantasies, but see them as sort of innocently non-sexual? Why can't we just be emotionally warm and go out to dinner and have a nice time, but without all that
other
stuff? Yeah.
Well, they, you know, romance is built into how we're trained as females, generally. Mm-hmm. Generally, that's part of our upbringing. So it's more of a habit to want that and expect it, even though most of us rarely have that in our relationships. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that was there before hormones, that, you know, the fantasies, the Walt Disney fantasies of
you
romance.
You don't bring me flowers anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I think in general, women still desire that. That's how they know that they're valued. But the
so
sexual part.
So they're markers of being loved.
Right.
Those kinds of mm-hmm. Disney-esque things.
Yeah. And then, but that's kind of hardwired early on. Mm-hmm. And then everything else has come with hormonal emergence when they're in their teens, and when they're in their 20s and 30s, they develop more of a sexual persona. And that has to do with their hormonal levels, as well as how they're taught and what their relationships are like. Some women have more testosterone than others. Some women have a higher sexuality than others. But that usually continues unabated until our 40s. Mm-hmm. Some people a little earlier than that, or if their ovaries are removed, it's a drastic change. And when that happens, I notice women saying either, my husband wanted me to come because he says we aren't having good sex, or we're not having sex often enough, or I don't want him, he feels mm-hmm. unloved, that kind of thing. They come to me because their marriage is on the rocks. Mm-hmm. They're not sure why, but they think it has something to do with sex because they don't talk about it.
Right.
Women don't talk about sex
right.
to their partners in this age group, in this generation. And it gets worse as we get older. I mean, it gets worse as we get to the people who are in their 60s. Mm-hmm. This is something good, nice women didn't talk about. So having a conversation about sex is not a normal thing to verbalize.
Right.
So it's all about body language and feelings and catching the mood from your husband. So, and all of that has to do with hormones and pheromones come from hormones.
Right, and the imbalance sometimes occurs because couples develop signaling or cueing strategies over the course of their relationship. It's that dance of cueing that we do. And when, if I understand what you're saying, when the testosterone diminishes and the hormone imbalance occurs, in the presence of that cueing, the receptor sites don't work.
Right.
And so even though I may be sending all the signals that we have mutually agreed without talking about, but experientially agreed, if your chemistry is off balance, then your receiver is not turned on, and so you're not getting those signals anyway. And I don't understand that. I don't know that. And then that makes me angry, hurt, jealous, whatever.
Even if you do know it, it makes you angry.
Well, you know, we have that conversation when people are taking antidepressants, because many antidepressants suppress both arousal and climax. Mm-hmm. And so when I have couples that I know are on antidepressants, one of the things I'm very careful to talk to them about is to say what you should expect over the next several months is that the partner who is on the antidepressant will lose the stimulatory arousal mechanisms. And they may be able to participate if the other partner starts it, but it isn't going to occur to them. It won't come naturally from them. And then even if they are participating responsibly mm-hmm. and get themselves engaged, all of a sudden in the middle of it, it just turns off like it had never started. And so then the non-medicated partner, if you will, has to understand that that's not personal. It's not that I don't love you and I don't care about you and I don't want you. It's that my body chemistry just shut off on me, and that's because of the drug. And so I would assume that some of the issues that you deal with testosterone and hormones, are similar.
Well, the medical community tends to put women who don't feel well mm-hmm. in their 40s on antidepressants. So it yes. just compounds
yeah.
their sexual impairment, and then it gets down to...
So it masks not, the other issues.
Right. They're not depressed anymore, but they're angry and they're stressed, and their mm-hmm. husbands are not happy, or their partners are not happy. So it makes everything worse. And instead, what we try to do is replace what's missing, not giving people just serotonin, which is what the antidepressants do, but oftentimes testosterone's a mood elevator. When we give people back their testosterone... Mm-hmm. then their mood elevates and they don't need the antidepressants. So we do two things. We give them back a sex drive. We overcome the antidepressant by increased dosing. But then we can get them off the antidepressant and then we can decrease our dose a little bit.
But that's not accepted in the general medical community. That's sort of a specialized knowledge that you have.
It's in the endocrine journals. I mean, endocrinologists know about this. They read about it. Anti-aging physicians know about this, read about this, have this as true medical knowledge, and I have articles that state right. this. However, in general, doctors, I mean, we're not picked because we have all this social knowledge or knowledge about sex, and generally physicians are kind of impaired in that mm-hmm. area because we're not very social in general, mm-hmm. and so they don't want to talk about it. I mean, they don't want to talk about it. So a physician doesn't really want to address these issues, so they don't. So they do the next best thing. Here, take this pill.
Okay, so to pull this thing full circle, though, we were talking about the brain as the most important sexual organ. And we're talking about the chemical messengers of the brain being out of whack. And if they're out of whack long enough for a different kind of habituation to occur, and then we restore the balance, it's my understanding of it would be similar to what we tell people that are on ADHD medicines. You know, you still have to develop compensatory strategies.
Right.
And once the medicine can normalize or restructure the chemical function of the brain, you still have to have performance strategies to make use of that opportunity. So then we come back to the brain developing performance strategies for seduction, for arousal, for creating the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. How do we facilitate that whole desire sexual experience component from just the physical release mm-hmm. component of the chemistry?
Happily, I rarely have to deal with that.
Oh, yeah. Take the easy way out.
No, really, when people come in with that issue, they come in with their partners or they come in alone, and mm-hmm. and we discuss how testosterone might change that. Mm-hmm. And they basically snap back within 6 weeks. Okay. I mean, they're back to their old brain pattern.
Okay.
Their old desire, their old sexuality. They, you know, in general, if this was chemical to begin with,
right,
then this will be treated.
So they don't have to relearn those.
No. In general, they don't. Now, sometimes I get people who have perfect levels, everything else gets better but that, mm-hmm. then I know they have to come see you or see someone to counsel them on how to get back into their old sexuality. Or maybe they were always like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may be that that was their normal, but now they're expecting something more. And I try not to have them accept something more, but they have so many friends that have had this.
Will I be able to play the piano if I take this medicine?
Right, yeah. Not if you've never played the piano before. So it's such a expectation-laden issue that I have to say, most of the time, yeah. this will bring people who are functional back. Now, people who don't want a sex drive generally don't show up in my office because they know testosterone replacement does cause that. If they just have a psychological block there.
Or if they're pressured to show up in your office.
Right.
Because somebody else has the leverage to say, this doesn't get better.
You know, right. They don't really want to be fixed.
Right.
And part in women's brains, that's more common than in men's. Men tend to have external obvious signs that their testosterone's low and they want to be fixed in general.
So do you think that's a physiological issue or do you think it's a cultural issue in terms of that whole Catholic message of sex is for procreation, and once you're not going to procreate, then sex is not a big deal anymore and it's okay to let it go?
Once again, those women don't show up in my office.
Yeah.
They don't care okay. about sex. They're not coming in whether their spouse wants them to. They'd rather lose their marriage then get back into a sexual relationship. Some of them say to me, oh, I'm so glad it's over. Yeah. That's just one thing off my list. And I just don't get it.
That's so sad.
I kind of don't get it. So yeah. I have a hard time relating to that.
Yeah.
But that's something that they felt their whole lives. They put up with it. And mm-hmm. now that they don't have to put up with it, they're like, who cares?
Mm.
That is not chemical because you can give them testosterone. They're not getting
that
back. Yeah,
they're not going to get it back. Right.
Because they don't want to. So there's a lot of higher thought yeah. brain work here. And then there's a lower thought brain work that is just the natural instinct that all people have that draws them to having sex. I mean, just like any other mammal, we're drawn to have sex if yeah. we are intact mentally and hormonally and emotionally. That's one of the things that's natural to being human. It's partly why we have so much problem with birth control in teenagers.
Right.
They have a very high level of hormone and it's all instinctual. It's not trained or
right.
and it's not condoned by society, but doesn't matter.
That leads to a whole range of other discussions that we'll be
yeah.
having in the future,
mm-hmm.
whether it's about the cultural messages of sex or the communication strategies of sex or the physiological aspects that need to be considered. There will be other days when we'll talk about those things.
Mm-hmm. And those things do matter. I guess this matters. This is a first a basis for us to go on with our discussions.
Okay.
I'd like to thank Brett Newcomb for helping shed light on these sensitive issues related to libido, hormone imbalance, and relationships. Please join Brett and me next time as we discuss the subject of mismatched desire, how to overcome it both medically and behaviorally. If you have any questions or comments about today's podcast, email them to podcast@biobalancehealth.com. And if you'd like to know more about BioBalance Bioidentical Hormone Pellet Therapy or the other services we offer at BioBalance, visit biobalancehealth.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Kathy Maupin.